Hello, and welcome to the Special Science Podcast from the 2009 AAAS Annual Meeting in Chicago, Illinois. It's February 14th. I'm Robert Frederick. The theme of this year's meetings is the origins and futures of life in our planet. And in this short podcast, we'll hear about the origins of the human diet, including what's universal across all human cultures, the cooked evening meal.
The challenge in modern times, I think, is the very fact that we're victims of our own evolutionary success in some sense.
William Leonard is an anthropologist and studies nutrition at Northwestern University.
We have created these diets that are extraordinarily high quality, rich in calories, rich in nutrients, and we've also minimized the amount of effort that is required to actually procure those calories, shifting us in the energy balance equation too far in one direction.
And so we get fat, or we exercise to stay thin, or, as Matthew Sponheimer says, we try to find a new diet, sometimes by looking at what people are eating in other countries. Sponheimer is an anthropologist at the University of Colorado Boulder.
Then you go and you look at the French and what they're doing, and we say, well, given what we understand about nutrition science, why aren't half of them falling over dead right now from heart disease?
And so just as scientists try to understand the incredible diversity of life by trying to understand its origins, scientists trying to understand the diversity of diets are looking at its origin, or what the earliest modern humans ate. Again, Matthew Sponheimer.
There are just a spate of books out there now about paleo diets. Neanderthin, 10,000 years from Eden. I mean, they're all over the bloody place. Lean Like Lucy will probably be the exercise video soon. Anyway.
But the science behind the diets of our ancestors is still very new, and there are many approaches just in hypothesizing about the origins of human diet. For example, Richard Wrangham looks at the diets of primates. Wrangham is a biological anthropologist at Harvard University.
I study chimpanzees in Western Uganda, and I have tasted almost every food that a chimpanzee eats. And it occurred to me one day that I might try living on what chimpanzees eat. And I, in fact, did not do this, but I realized that it would not be more than a few hours before I would come home extremely hungry and unhappy about my little plan. And when I reflected on the difficulty of a human surviving on a chimpanzee diet, it occurred to me that the key thing about the human diet is the fact that we process our foods.
And one of the main ways we process our foods, Wrangham says, is by cooking them.
Cooking is the signature feature of the human diet in the sense that it is universal, but more than that, it's universal as a culture. More than that, it is the cooked evening meal that is universal for hunters and gatherers. So what this means is that people can go off foraging, snacking on raw foods during the day, and then count on having a cooked evening meal at night.
Which gives us the additional energy we need because, Wrangham says, we are not very well adapted to eating raw foods. So we cook to add energy to our foods, something Wrangham calls the energy theory of cooking.
The energy theory of cooking, it's very simple. It is that whenever you cook, you increase the amount of energy that you get from the food. And as a primatologist, we see that energy is absolutely critical. It is what natural selection is constantly trying to maximize, because the more energy animals have, the more babies they have. And I see three major mechanisms by which energy is increased by cooking. That is gelatinization of starch, denaturation of proteins, and softening of food, which leads to a reduction in the costs of digestion.
Now, there are many approaches, as we've already heard, to reconstructing diets of human ancestors.
Peter Unger is an anthropologist at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville.
We can look at models derived from chimpanzees and other non-human primates. We can look at human foragers today. We can take nutritional models. We can take models derived from genetic studies. We can also look at contextual evidence. We can look at the plants and animals that were around at the same places at the same times that our ancestors lived, and their refuse, the archaeological remains.
And Unger says all of these help in generating hypotheses as to what early hominids ate. In testing these hypotheses, Unger says there are two lines of evidence.
We can look at the adaptive evidence. And by adaptive, I mean the things basically that you see here.
Pointing to a series of skulls and jaws and teeth of human and human-like creatures.
The sizes and shapes of the teeth, the structures of the teeth, the jaws and the face and so forth. And what those tell you about what a particular species was capable of consuming, for example. Or we can look at non-adaptive lines of evidence. Things like the scratches and pits that form on teeth as the result of their use. Those patterns can tell us something about the foods that hominins ate. The chemical compositions of the teeth themselves, the isotope signatures, reflect the sorts of foods that specific animals in the past ate. The challenge that we face here, and what's really new about where we're going today, is trying to integrate all of these different lines of evidence. Can we use these models and contextual evidence to form hypotheses we can test by looking at the fossils themselves?
And as so often the case with science, theories about what our ancestors ate will have to be adjusted as new evidence becomes available, such as evidence from DNA.
And with the various genome projects, this is a really fascinating time to be a geneticist.
Ann Stone is a geneticist at Arizona State University.
Because we have an enormous amount of information, however, we don't know what a lot of it means yet.
And the recent announcement that scientists have drafted the Neanderthal genome will almost certainly prompt even more questions about the origin of our diets when scientists compare our genomes with that of our extinct closest cousins. Still, as Northwestern University's William Leonard summarizes,
in a very real sense, what made humans humans is our ability to find or make a meal in any environment. And as a consequence, when you look across the globe, you can find human populations living well and healthily on a tremendous diversity of diets.
And so Leonard says, if we are to make sense of what we eat, we especially need to examine how much we eat.
So how many calories do hunter-gatherers and agriculturalists and pastoralists need to move about on a daily basis? How many calories do they require? How does that compare to modern Western energy requirements? And then the secondary question of, if we modify our modern lifestyles along the lines that the federal government or the NRC would like us to, how close does that bring us to the energy budgets that we find in these subsistence level populations?
This has been a special science podcast from the 2009 AAAS Annual Meeting in Chicago, Illinois. If you would, please take a moment to give us your input. Write us at sciencepodcast@aaas.org, or please fill out our online anonymous survey at www.sciencemag.org/multimedia. The show is a production of Science and of AAAS, the Science Society. Jeffrey Cook composed the music, and I'm Robert Frederick. On behalf of Science Magazine and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for joining us.